This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Green from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Listening to the Extra Point Show from the Just Call Jed Studios. Injured? Call Jed.com. WGR Sports Radio 550.
Welcome, everybody. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. We're brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Sabres keep winning.
The Sabres are in last place in the East for the first time since December 14th. Let's rage!
Has it really been that long?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're not in last place in the Boston.
Which
is so much better.
I had to help all of you when I had to contain my excitement just now and shuffled myself 3 feet back from the microphone to do that.
You also didn't turn your microphone on.
That is even better.
I didn't realize it had been that
You're welcome.
Long.
Again, containing excitement. You knew it. You knew the assignment. You understood.
Oh,
Josh
man.
Schmidt doing great things on the board as per usual. I'm snarky excited about that.
Because they're
not doing it.
They're not dead last, but they're close.
Let's be Labatt crystal clear on that one. They're not doing it.
No.
How evil would it be? This is the scenario I said with one of my friends last night. Zach, over the last few years, they cannot solve the Philadelphia Flyers. They're one of like two teams that are like, why?
Mm-hmm.
Imagine that they went on just a crackhead run.
Yeah.
Who's waiting for them at the end of the season with the playoffs on the line?
Philadelphia. Last game of the year.
If they go on some sort of like miracle run. Hollywood would say that's too scripted.
It's not going to happen. They have Tampa and Boston this weekend. One of those back-to-backs.
No. First of all, let's not call Boston a threat anymore.
Still a back-to-back.
Boston's about to pull a Buffalo streak here. They're at nine.
Yeah, they're nine. We'll get more on the Sabres here in just a little bit. Though, we do want to start today with our coverage of the NFL owners' meetings. It's not live from Palm Beach, Florida. I believe our own Sal Capaccio is back. But our coverage of the NFL owners' meetings is brought to you by Window Nation, the perfect fit for your home and wallet. Visit windownation.com. Sal, good morning. How are we doing?
Yeah, welcome. I'm doing well. It's not sunny Palm Beach. It is partly sunny Buffalo.
I know. I was going to say, I'm sorry. It's so cold this morning.
I was ready to say, you can't flex on us today, Capaccio. Nice try.
Yeah, I know. It was good, though. It was good. Had a really productive week. Got a lot done. Obviously, the Pete Welly stuff to start off the week. Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott, lots of league stuff over the last couple of days. So whatever... Uh, whatever you guys want to touch on. A lot of stuff yesterday with the rules, obviously. So, you know, really, really a lot happening this week in Palm Beach at the owners' meetings.
Yeah, the rules sort of took the kind of headlines here. Ultimately, the one that was really the headliner, nothing changed. It's tabled to a later date, that being the Tush push. But Sal, what did you kind of take away from I guess, ultimately this week as it got started this weekend? What was your biggest takeaway?
Well, I think league-wide, that there's a lot of still polarization on the Tush push, right? I mean, I think that's a big deal right now. And there's a lot of, let's start there from what I took away, which is, you know, there's just language in the way that it's written that people are still kind of going back and forth on. Now, guys, they have a split vote of 16-16, from what I understand. You need 24 to pass a new rule. So, but think about that. You know, it's that divided on the Tush push. It's 16-16 amongst the 32 teams. And part of the reason why you're not getting closer to having the 75% is there is some language even where people who might be in support of banning it saying, well, what are we doing here? Like, what exactly does this say? So it says immediately after the snap. Does Josh Allen go immediately after the snap? I'm using him as an example here, right? He steps to the left. Like, what does that look like? I was also told that there's, you know, there's defensive teams, coaches raising the concern of, wait a minute, why are you allowed to push when we can't push on defense when it comes to a field goal? Why can't we push off somebody? Right. You know what I mean? Like, there's so many layers here. That's amazing when you think about, right? And there was even a suggestion from somebody in the room. Now, when I say in the room, you have the competition committee with and then all the NFL execs. Then you have basically every head coach, every GM. And I think owners, if they as well, if they want to participate or somebody proxy, whatever. But I think all of them are in this room together talking about this stuff. And I think competition committee is kind of sits at the head, if you will, like a wedding. Right. I mean, I'm envisioning it. I've never been in the room myself, but this is how it explained to me. And then everybody else has a chance to talk, though, and raise their hand and say things about this because they're all, you know, stakeholders in this. And somebody in the room said, you know, why don't we just go back to the pre-2004 rule that said you can't push or pull anyone anywhere on the field. It's aiding the runner. This is the point I've made many, many times. You guys know that. I think aiding the runner has been a part of football. It's been against it for many years, but they got rid of it 21 years ago. And the reason they got rid of it was officials were having a tough time discerning what was aiding and what wasn't at certain points on the field, down the field, in a big pile, who's doing it, who's not doing it. I said, let's just get rid of it. That's kind of why the Tush push started, because there was no rule against it. I'm whoever did that. Hey, good job. I'm with you.
Yeah, and it's so interesting because I've heard so many callers bring that up too. Where it's like it just randomly happened. No one knows why. And
a few years ago, just out of nowhere, Philadelphia has this thing here, Sal.
Well, they did a great job of looking at the rules and saying we're allowed to do this, right? Yep. We can do this. I mean, you think about it too. Everyone thinks this is just the quarterbacks and the data. And it's not just about quarterbacks. It's centers. The center for the team that was the best ever at doing it, the Eagles from a couple of years ago, and they're still the best at it, Jason Kelce hated the play because of what it did to his body. Deion Dawkins was on radio last week saying he doesn't like the play either because of what it does to his body. But what about defenders and what it's doing to them and how they're getting crunched up in the middle? Look, I'm presenting the side of why people don't want it. And then there's the other side of, dude, if you don't like it, stop it. It's a play. One thing that really stood out to me yesterday when Rich McKay was talking, competition committee member, you know, he mentioned a couple times, and I've heard this, is it more of a rugby player or a football player? We have football plays, right? Like, I'm paraphrasing how he put it, but it was interesting because I think that's actually a part of the discussion of people saying, that's not football, that's rugby. We don't play rugby. I just think it's fascinating.
I've been radicalized by all this Tush push talk now. I'm pretty much done with it. I'm ready to be like, nope. The only reason I want it banned now is just so I can stop hearing about having to say the words Tush push over and over again, Sal. So I do want to move on to one that was changed, a rule that was changed, and something that I found out you and I kind of shared the same wavelength on here, Sal. The kickoff being moved, the touchback, I should say, being moved to the 35-yard line. And my biggest question to Zach yesterday on this show was, why are we just not moving kickers back if they're showing to be too good?
It's a really good question. So I took that question to Darren Rizzi. Darren Rizzi is a special teams coordinator who's been a part of the competition committee crafting these rules for the last couple of years. And I asked that question to Darren Rizzi. Why don't you just move the kicker back? He said, you know what? We had a lot of discussion about it, and there's a lot of appetite for that. But here's the reason that he gave, which is, you have to still land the ball in the landing zone, as you guys know, right from the 20 to the goal line. So even if you move the kickers back, the kickers are they're still strong enough to kick it through the end zone, right? If you really wanted to do that. And they're still very good at being able to put it in the landing zone. But when the weather starts to turn, it's tougher to do that. Think about playing golf in poorer conditions than pristine conditions, where you're going to have to control the ball a little bit more. You have to think about the wind. You have to think about the wet weather, things like that. Well, the thought is from colder weather teams, it's a bit disadvantageous to them because if they want to land at landing zone, that's tougher for their kicker to do late in the season. So they don't want to have teams that simply play outdoors, colder weather cities, to have a disadvantage when it comes to that because it's a little bit tougher to actually pinpoint what you want to do with the ball as a kicker in those situations. Now, he did say to me, hey, the UFL is doing this. They're actually putting, I think they're going to the 35 for touchbacks, and they're moving the kicker back. He said, but the thing is about the UFL, they play in the spring. They don't have these weather concerns. That's the reason he gave.
Sal, you brought it up yesterday, too, when talking about it, and this is maybe where I took it, too, is that teams maybe now are going to look more at kick returners. Like you've brought up, the Bills now have brought in Laviska Shenault. They already had Brandon Codrington. And for me, like that's where I got excited about this even a few weeks ago when this was first pitched as an idea, because I think teams' defenses will be worried about just that, even just the 5-yard bonus the offenses will get. You can argue for some of these teams, they gain 9 yards on that opening drive and they're going to go for it on fourth down. They're already in a comfortable enough position, depending on the team, to go for it. And I'm all for bringing returners back. Like, even with the new kickoff rules, I still found it to be close to kind of a meaningless play. I didn't really care for it still. I think this is another direction to maybe make the play more fun, like it had been kind of even before I started watching football.
Yeah, this is such a, like, broader type of context with the kickoffs. It's not just increasing returns. That is a big part of it. They want to return. They want more returns, guys. I mean, The NFL has, and this is partly why they moved the extra point back. It's actually the reason why they moved the extra point back several years ago, which is we want every play to matter where someone doesn't leave the living room to go get something to drink and say the next play doesn't matter, right? A kickoff had become that because teams just kicked it out of the end zone. Ah, you start at the 20. Well, guess what? Let's have them start at the 30 and see what happens. And it worked. There were more kickoff returns last year, no doubt about it. They also did what they really intended, which is decrease injuries. If we're going to do this, let's put the two sides closer to each other. You can't start until the ball is caught. Now you don't have these speeds of guys running 60 yards down the field each other in these high-speed collisions. The speed decreased. They talk about all this. The speed of the players decreased. The rate of collision rate decreased. The concussion rate decreased. It actually leveled off to last year, what the league data shows, the concussion rate on kickoffs actually leveled out to what the same concussion rate is on regular scrimmage plays. Okay, so it had been higher. Then here's the other part about this. And I didn't think about this, and Darren Rizzi brought it up to me. Punts are actually plays that they'd rather kind of not see. They're a little boring. You want to see scoring. You want to see moving.
Mm-hmm.
But also punts, I guess, have even more of an injury rate than kickoffs. And you could think you think about that with gunners and punt returners getting hit, whatever. But that's what they said. That's what the data shows. And he said by moving the kickoff up, they actually reduced punting a lot because what you just said, Zach, teams only need a first down to be near midfield. At that point, you might be punting, but you're so close to either kicking a field goal, going for it in a fourth down situation. So now they're going to do it even more. By moving the touchback up, they've effectively also decreased the amount of punting in the league.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that.
I'm thinking about the guy that's like trying to chase down the play,
yep,
and he gets that blindside lookout block. Mm-hmm. That's where a lot of those injuries also happen there. So my last question on this is going to be, are there going to be a lot of coaches that still take a philosophy change and not being afraid of 5 more yards up the field and still blast it out of the end zone anyway?
I guess there can be. You know what I think is going to happen? Derek, who knows, right? I mean, I think that last year I was really into this last year, thinking about like what is each team going to do. I really think it's specific to your team. Here's the scenario I'll present to you guys. Let me throw this back at you, all right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're facing Josh Allen, do you want them to start at the 35-yard line?
Yeah, absolutely not.
Right. If you're facing a rookie quarterback who hasn't figured it out yet, are you a little bit more willing to have him start at the 35-yard line?
Probably.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. It'll be a respect factor.
So I think there's your answer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's your answer. I think that this is going to come down to maybe less about the kick return itself and more about what offense are we facing. And, hey, I'm not giving Patrick Mahomes, I know last year they weren't as good on, but I'm using the quarterback as an example here. You know, I'm not giving the Ravens defense starting field position at 35. Sorry, just not doing that. I'll take my chances and make them return it. So Darren Rizzi said 84% of the returns last year started at the 34 or back. All right, so there, if that means, think about this, 16% or more, 16%, sorry, started at the 35-yard line or above. How many teams really want that? Because we're already seeing data where teams don't want 34 and back. You know, you're not, you don't want to be in that upper echelon of that starting field position there. So you want to make sure it's starting back. That's why the 35 is a bit of a key number here as well. But I think it's going to come down to quarterbacks and, you know, basically game-to-game situational football.
Cleveland's going to see so many touchbacks, you won't even know what hit them.
I know, right?
I also,
and it could come, and it's going to be the returner too. I mean, you know, if you have a guy like if the Bills, if Laviska Shenault is on the team, I don't even know if he makes the team, but if he is and he's, you know, the dynamic kick returner, hey, you know, keep it away from him. Devin Duvernay just signed with the Bears. Like, that's why teams are doing this. They're like, hey, you're not going to kick it out, or you're not going to kick it to our, we will take it at the 35 or risk our guy bringing it back on you.
I'm also thinking, like, I'm all the way back. Like, I was last year with the new kickoffs and, like, kind of, like, going through the theories. I'm all the way back with that now because I'm thinking, like, in the middle of a game. Like, let's say the Patriots, Drake May, they're deciding, nah, May's not going to beat us. So, they, you know, touchbacks. And all of a sudden, it's 14-3 going into the second quarter that just score quickly. And you see mid-game that kind of decision change. And then all of a sudden, what does that do to sort of the mentality of the game? Because, you know, Twitter's everybody going to be, you know, they disrespected them or, you know, now they're showing them too much respect, what have you. I like the idea that that's going to change potentially in the middle of a game. And you kind of got to react to it. Like, that's right there. That makes the kickoff more exciting to see how it goes. Sal.
And I would say they didn't change the point of if the ball lands in the landing zone and then goes through the end zone, the other team only gets it at the 20. I wonder if you're going to see teams really try to train their kickers as best they can. Yeah, these kickers are great, but you can't just do this on a whim. Like, you got to be really good and proficient. I wonder if their teams are going to try to train their kickers to really drill it on a line drive, land in that landing zone, and roll out, because then you get it at the 20.
Yeah. Okay, now this, yeah, I'm in.
Okay, now I've been convinced. Yesterday I wasn't really for it. Now I'm in.
Because that whole thing.
It's really interesting.
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
But thank you for the added nuance on that, because, like, you had a nice discussion about that yesterday with Mike, and I was like, you know what? I need to make sure that I asked Sal about this, because I was anti, you know, touchback ruling and more of why not move the kicker back? Because he has all the field to roam, and he still would have all the field to roam.
Yeah, well, we'll see how teams approach it. Everybody's going to be a little different here, guys. And, you know, I'm again, like last year, I'm kind of – let's remember, the Bills have a new special teams coordinator. And his name is Chris Tabor. Chris Tabor was not in football last year. He's renowned. I will tell you, I've talked to enough people who believe the Bills had a massive upgrade in special teams coordinator. No disrespect to Matthew Smiley, but he was still a guy who had been a first-time coordinator, and we saw some gaffes last year. I'm telling you, I talk to enough people in this league, other special teams coordinators, who say, oh yeah, like, you need to prepare for Chris Tabor. He'll be ready, he'll be buttoned up, he'll be prepared. But I will also remind people, he didn't do this last year. So this is his first year dealing with the kickoff rules.
Yeah, so that adds another wrinkle to it right there. Sal Capaccio here on the Wester Hotline. Sal, going away from the rules, I did want to get your thought, if you saw this yesterday, the stuff going on with the Cowboys. Jerry Jones deciding to just not talk to Micah Parsons' agent, offering him a record-breaking contract. Parsons going on Twitter saying that he's not going to sign until his agent's available. What even are the Cowboys anymore at this point? Someone's got to pull a coup in Dallas. It feels like Jones has just lost the plot.
So here's what I think about the Dallas Cowboys, that they've kind of operated that it, over the last, you know, I guess really 20 years, the better part of it at least, they feel they're the Dallas Cowboys and they don't have to do anything special or different, or they don't have to go, like, everybody should come to them. And because they're the Cowboys, you're going to want to play for us, and I don't need to go and do anything to make sure I keep you. I think they've operated with that hubris mentality, and it's shown that that's not correct. A, they're not winning, and B, there's, you know, a lot of other options around there that teams, you know, I mean, I guess when you think about it, like, this generation of player, when have they seen the Cowboys win? Like, when I grew up, guys, the Cowboys were called America's team. Hey, they wore the star on their helmet, and the reason they were called America's team is they won a lot.
Yeah.
And everybody gravitated to them. Just like you see in a lot of sports and all these really great teams and, you know, people, all the kids just start watching them. You know, the 70s and then the early 80s, they were okay, and then they get better again in the 80s. Then the 90s, of course, right? The 90s, they come back with Aikman and Emmitt and, you know, Michael Irvin and those guys, and they win again. That's a long time ago. Guys playing in the NFL weren't even alive in the early 90s to see that. The Cowboys haven't been relevant as far as winning football games and playoff games in a long time. You can't just operate like you're the Dallas Cowboys and everyone needs to do what you want them to do.
Yeah, and like, and me and Derek were talking about it before the show starts. I wanted to bring this point up. It's, you know, no one loves to brag more, Jerry Jones, about some risky decision he made 36 years ago. Like, and I think that like that is exactly like that, to yeah. your point, where like
yeah.
he still operates like it's 1989 and he just bought the Dallas Cowboys when no one told him to. It's like, Jerry, I'm going to be 27 at the end of this month. I've never seen the Cowboys be legitimately good for a stretch of period of time. I've never seen it. I've seen the Cowboys be the brand. I've seen them do a lot of reality TV shows like Hard Knocks. Their cheerleaders got a reality TV show on Netflix. I've seen all that, but I've never seen the America's Team Cowboys. And I'm the player he's trying to sign, like my age group.
Yes.
Yeah, right. That's right. And I think that's important here, right? But it's a business for everybody. And it's not, and again, and look, Dak is a really good quarterback, but he hasn't had the best couple of years. And, you know, he's, last couple of years, he hasn't been as great. I guess a couple of years ago, he was in the MVP conversation for sure. But I mean, 2 years ago, but, you know, he's not Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes or Joe Burrow or Lamar Jackson. You know, it's funny. And to this point you're making, so why, how this relates to what I'm saying is Matt Bove made this point, and it's always game day in Buffalo. I don't want to steal his point. I want to bring his point here because I think it's right. If you really want to know the true value of Josh Allen, yes, he's the most valuable player in the league. He's amazing. He's elite. You could argue he's the best football player in the NFL. But look at these extensions they're signing and some of these guys to team-friendly deals.
Yes.
Because they're saying, oh, yeah, I want to play with Josh Allen. I'm going to have a chance to win. Right? Like, the Cowboys don't have that. They have Dak Prescott, a really nice quarterback. He's not Josh Allen. He's not one of these MVP guys. And they're not knocking on the door of championships. That's truly, too, the value of Josh Allen. I do want to say, though, I used to be very anti-Jerry Jones. Because when I was growing up, or a little bit, and you know, young adult, Jerry was the big bad, oh my God, the Cowboys, all this oil money, and I'm just going to do everything my way and screw the rest of the league and these small market teams. I'm going to keep all this revenue from marketing, all these deals on the side. And here he had Ralph Wilson, small market. Are the Bills ever going to leave Buffalo? We were always worried about that. He's not going to pay for the top players. He did for a while. We were always worried about that. I'm telling you, though, over the last 10 to 15 years, I've had a major shift because it's deserved. Jerry Jones is really great for the league.
100%.
And I think that should be known because Jerry Jones, I will tell you, there are people, I don't know if it goes recognized how much he's done to help every team, including the Bills. Jerry Jones was a very big proponent, not an opponent, a proponent of a new stadium in Buffalo to keep the Bills in Buffalo. Like, he helped that along the way. He actually is the, what is the new concession? Legends. That's his group. Legends, they're going to be the concessions, they're helping build the stadium, construction. Like, Jerry's a big part of that. I think one of the things that's happened with the Cowboys, and I know this sounds weird because I want to, like you, this is great, but it also, if you're a Cowboys fan, it kind of sucks too. I think Jerry has taken more pride almost in being a steward of the NFL than a steward of the Dallas Cowboys in a lot of ways, if that makes sense.
No, I think that's right. And Sal, I'm really glad you brought that up because of how much of the Dallas Cowboy brand is Jerry Jones, him being the general manager, the president, and of course the owner, and then his family having, you know, key roles within the organization. It can be lost at just how much he has been maybe the focal member in what has now become the modern NFL and the business model that it is today, where without question, the NFL has overtaken the NBA in Christmas, without question.
Oh, yeah, here we go. Yeah, for sure. I mean, this is obviously the schedule stuff we can get to. But, yeah, I just think it's worth pointing out real quick on the Jerry Jones discussion. The league teams, including here in Buffalo, have a lot to be thankful to have Jerry Jones a part of the league because a lot of the decisions and way he steers and has a voice in that room. So I'm not saying he's the reason, like the Bills exist or the Bengals exist. That's not what I'm saying. But he has really seen the big picture, much like Pete Rozelle and early days, like those guys and Ralph Wilson back in the early days when they started and they had the AFL and the merger. Like, he has really seen the big picture of the league and help it grow. And I think that needs to be recognized league-wide, because that wasn't the case for a long time ago, but it definitely is the case now. Christmas. So I tweeted out a report that from The Athletic, and it is that the Chiefs have apparently gone to the league and asked if they can be featured on Christmas every year, much like the Lions and Cowboys on Thanksgiving. They have played each of the last 2 years. This is in conjunction with the league saying yesterday they are going to play 3 games on Christmas Day this year, 2 on Netflix, 1 on Amazon Prime. Yes, the NFL is here to stay on Christmas, and I believe now it has become the NFL's day even more than the NBA's day. I think ratings showed that last year.
If the Chiefs are on Christmas every year, call me the Grinch or Ebenezer Scrooge, because, like, bah humbug at this point, you know?
Well, I'll give you another one here, Derek. Think about this. They're going to be on Christmas if they are on this year. They do come to Buffalo this year, and the Bills are the Hallmark movie.
Oh,
and
that
would kind of fit.
I don't know. CBS would rather start a war than lose Bills Chiefs at 4:25.
Yeah, that's true. But they've done it. But it's not CBS's call. Yeah. I will tell. It's not CBS's call.
I know.
It's the league schedule maker's call. Hey, that's a great discussion. So every year I talk at Mike North, you know, on the podcast. We'll do that again this year, hopefully. Me and Matt Bove. And people wonder how that works. Like, is it just, oh, CBS protects? There's no protecting games before the schedule comes out. None. What does happen, though, is the NFL is thoughtful about where these games land, saying, look, CBS had Bills Chiefs last year, or NBC had it the year before. And they kind of try to spread the love a little bit. You know what I mean? Where was it last year? The game was CBS, wasn't it? Wasn't it 4:25?
Yes, it was.
Okay. Well, to me, that's saying, okay, well, you had them last year. Maybe someone else gets them this year. Just think about that.
Yeah, the last few years, too. It's been this weird run where Chiefs not primetime.
I'm just ready for, like, CBS to, like, have covert operatives sneaking into the league's offices and making sure to hack in there and be like, Bills Chiefs, CBS.
425.
They do make a little bit of, like, I guess, side deals sometimes of, hey, listen, we're going to flex this one game this year that you really wanted, but we're going to give you that next year. Give something that, like, they do things like that.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, we'll make sure you get it. So anything can happen. And what I don't know is, did the Chiefs ask to be the home team on Christmas? I don't know. Maybe if that's the case, it wouldn't be the Bills this year, obviously. But it wouldn't mean the Bills couldn't play still on Christmas. Guys, I think
you
the Bills
brought
are
up too
very
good of a
much.
Point.
Yeah, I think the Bills are very much in the mix to be either on Christmas or Black Friday this year. Heck, maybe both.
Yep, fully agree. Sal, before we let you go here.
I hate that.
Black Friday, I'll take. Christmas, I'll be upset.
Because you and I said it when Sal asked that yesterday, immediately.
Black Friday, 100%. Yeah. Sal, though, before we let you go here, league meetings are over with. What's next on the schedule? It appears the draft is probably the next thing, because the next meeting's right are in May.
Yeah, so we got league stuff and you got Bills stuff. The next thing for the Bills is today, guys. Christian Benford's going to meet with the media at noon to talk about his contract extensions. How about that?
There we go.
So we'll hear from Christian Benford today. And then, you know, you got the Bills can always sign players. We know that. A lot of times you get a couple signings before the draft because they want to make sure they're not in a position where they reach because they don't have a certain position set to where they want it by the time they get to the draft. So that can always happen at any point. The draft's a little bit earlier this year. It's April 24th, so it's 3 weeks from tomorrow night. We usually get Brandon Bean for a press conference some point then. And, guys, by the way, the Bills start their off-season workout program the week of the NFL draft on that Monday. How about that? So yeah, you can that's going to be happening. So, but the draft is the next order of business on the league calendar.
Very, very busy month. The draft starts April 24th in Green Bay. Sal, thank you so much. We'll talk again soon.
You got it, guys. Thanks.
That was Sal Capaccio there on the Wester Hotline. And just one more time, we'll get that read in as WGR's coverage of the NFL owners' meetings live from Palm Beach, Florida earlier this week. And now, of course, Buffalo Today with Sal Capaccio is brought to you by Window Nation, the perfect fit for your home and wallet. Visit windownation.com. Got to take a quick time out here if you want to join the discussion, some of the rule change stuff, the schedule as well, or some draft talk as well, because we are less than a month away from the first round. And I did see a number of mock drafts that have the Bills trading out of the first round. Love to talk that. 803-0550, the number two call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, you're listening to Northtown Automotive X Point Show. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer hanging out here Till 12 o'clock, you listen to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Just had Sal Capaccio on talking really kind of the recap of the week for the NFL league meetings, NFL owners meetings, however you want to put it. And yeah, I without a doubt, my favorite thing has been the change to the kickoffs.
Yeah. And
without a doubt.
And yesterday I was not a proponent for it, but now I am, if only because now I can see the disrespect factor.
Well,
that has sold me alone for your trash. Oh, you have Mason Rudolph at quarterback, Pittsburgh? All right.
Touchback. Take it to 35. Cool.
Take it to 35. I dare you. I double dare you.
We were talking in the break, too. Like, I think that is going
to
be
Orleans.
Something.
New Orleans. Am I scared of you?
Derek
no.
Carr. But it's going to be something like in the middle of the season. It'll be cool to look at, like, all right, who has faced the most touchbacks? Who's their quarterback? What's their offensive numbers? Like, where do
is
they rank in the league?
Is it working for them?
Yeah. And I want to see that, like, if you have, like, a middling quarterback, but that 5 yards. And we talked with Sal, where all of a sudden teams are going to be more willing to go for fourth downs. They're closer to field goal range, stuff like that. Did it actively help you, even if you have, quote unquote, a bad quarterback, middling quarterback, what have you? I'm so curious into that.
I cannot wait for, we are interesting, like the kickoffs rule is interesting and it's different again. I can't wait for coaches to be like, nah.
Yeah.
Like, that is a possibility.
That is 100% a possibility.
It is a possibility. Why? Because in any sport, if there's an opportunity to, coaches take the fun out of something.
Well,
I've watched too much hockey in my life to realize that coaches will take something fun and kill it.
Especially, though, if kick returns do become a major factor in the league again.
Yes.
What do coaches hate giving up more than anything?
Big
plays.
Oh, my God.
So if they're sitting there going, we'll take you at the 35 as long as it's not a big play, they'll do it.
Yeah.
And so that is, yeah, my only fear is that it works too well and kick returns do have a big pop off because it'll last like 3 weeks. It'll be super fun.
And then coaches will
and
be like,
go away.
Mm-hmm.
That's my only fear is that it works too well.
Yes.
And that's what happens. Teams are preparing for it. And that's also something, too, that, like, let's say, you know, because I really was a big fan of Brandon Codrington last year. I thought he had something to that kickoff return unit that really,
yes.
The Bills had a bad special teams unit last year. He was a shining beacon.
He was
to that.
Kind of the only bright spot.
Yeah. What if he all of a sudden hits? I mean, how as a team do you handle that now? Brandon Codrington, again, let's argue for argument's sake, he hits, or Laviska Shenault does, because it looks like they're going to maybe have a competition there. Do you take maybe the big return from him, or do you put Josh Allen at the 35? Or, as Sal put it, do you want to try to get super accurate and roll that baby out of bounds, take it at the 20?
But football's also, after the first bounce, you don't know where it's going.
Yeah, you have no idea. You can't.
That's the thing with football.
Mm-hmm.
The first bounce is predictable. Second bounce? No.
But that strategic mindset already gets me excited where it's like, by week five, Codrington's hitting and Allen's the reigning MVP. What do you want?
Let's look at the other side of the coin.
Mm-hmm.
Tyler Bass. Who I think after the moonshot against Miami was much better.
Yep. Not great, but much better. That's right.
Like, but he was markedly better. Like, he was not a cut candidate at that point.
Mm-hmm.
The way that he closed his season. Matter of fact, you know, in the playoffs, he did his job. One might even say. What does it do for him? Because there's already, you know, not great opinions if I go out on the street and say something about, like, Tyler Bass, what do you think?
Yeah.
I'm getting a mixed opinion. If he's not able to make it skilled, or if he's a guy that, it, like, he has to just moonshot the football into the end zone, what does it do for him if he's not able to do this?
I think what does it do for a lot of kickers? Like, you're right to bring him up because it all of a sudden goes to, hey, I'm great at making field goals. I can't do anything on the kickoff.
And then do you need to waste a roster spot, not just the Bills, any team, do you need to waste a roster spot on a kickoff specialist that can do this?
Ooh. I think that's also where
Do you use a punter?
Or does all of a sudden we have to use draft picks on punters or kickers?
That can do this.
That can do this and do it at a high level.
And by the way, that's not a trait that you're teaching at the college level.
No.
That's not a play you're learning in college.
Yeah, it's going to be curious.
Because college football has not adopted kickoff rules. So not only are you drafting players and trying to invest in kickers, you're then trying to teach them. Any new kicker coming into the league has to learn an entirely new skill set. Because even up to last year, it's, can you blast the football out of the end zone?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah, you're safe.
We're all right.
Teams will always take the points. Like, if you can kick field goals at a high rate, we're taking you. We'll deal with the kickoff. But if it does become a thing where, hey,
if it's that bad,
you cannot kick it to that kick returner, and they're not great at that,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then are you going to just tell them to go to the 35?
Then realistically, we're going to get another rule change where it's like, hey, you can actually have like three guys who are kicking specialists. It doesn't take up a roster spot.
Yes.
And like, that'll bother me.
That's an interesting impact that could be seen for a longer term sense,
mm-hmm.
If things do work out that way. I am a pessimist still. Like I said, you guys changed my mind on what the interest could be for me. I'm also still a pessimist of somehow this fun idea is going to be muddled down and kind of irrelevant.
Well, no, and I think you bring up a great point with that, though, of like coaches, you know, quote unquote, taking away the fun because it might hurt them.
Yes.
And yeah, last year the kickoff kind of was ultimately meaningless. It looked different. It was different.
All those new rules we were given explanation of. And who's the team that lets up the first big play on a kick return?
Oh yeah, love that one. Love that. Love that.
Matthew Smiley and the Buffalo Bills.
I want this to hit so bad.
Yes.
Because there were teams not that long ago that lived and died by special teams. Their
yes.
offenses weren't good enough, but because their special teams were good,
the Chicago Bears back in the day made a Super Bowl because of the impact that their defense and special teams made.
They had Rex Grossman at quarterback, but Devin Hester was returning kicks, and that defense was great, and they ran that to the Super Bowl.
They went to the Super Bowl. Rex Grossman was a starting quarterback in a Super Bowl.
And a part of me, it's sort of my same issue with basketball, mainly the NBA, college not so much, but where the NFL, yes, it's always teeter towards, hey, you need a quarterback to get far, but there was always that one or two teams every 10 years that, no, we have a great defense, or we have, you know, that just a dynamic weapon that can get us there. Maybe not win a Super Bowl, but be really darn good for a long time. The NBA sort of hit that point, too, where if you don't have a great three-point shooting team, you might be good, but you're probably not going to be great. You need to be able to shoot the ball unless you have a Nikola Jokic, where he's maybe the greatest big man of all time.
Yeah.
And a lot of NBA games have become very stale. It's a three-point shooting contest for a lot of those games.
For a lot of games. And that's where like that interesting like ideal about kickers transitioning with this new rule in college basketball.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost a different game.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, there are teams that play small ball, play it deep, three-point shooting teams.
Mm-hmm.
It's not all of them.
No.
In the NBA, it's all of them.
It has to be. And it has to be. When it was just the Warriors, and to a lesser argument, like teams like Houston, who were big offensive teams, it was radical. Now it's the norm. And you see it, too, at the lower levels where kids are just chucking up threes, and you're like, ah, okay, what
stop
are we doing
that.
Yeah, what are we doing here?
But in college, you still play basketball.
Because you maybe don't have the athletes. A lot of mid-majors have to play small ball. They don't got 2 7-foot-tall guys to play center.
Right, but then there are your majors, your big teams. They have these. Mm-hmm. They have this size, and they're like, we can play big on you.
Yeah.
Let's go.
But it's just, I want that different element to an NFL game.
Yes.
To bring it back, to make it more exciting. Yeah, to make the kickoff where you got to stay in your seat. You got to stay in your seat and watch this through.
It's not – because that's what they did with the extra point. The mm-hmm. extra point was an automatic play.
Oh, 100%.
Except for and when it was a miss, it was a big deal.
Yeah.
The biggest one being John Carney when the Saints went to tie it up on a lateral play and Carney misses the extra point.
Yes.
I'll never forget that play. But that's one of the few times you remember an extra point back in the day.
That was really it.
That's it. That's the only reason you could. Now, extra points being missed is, I'm not going to say it's not common, but it's not rare.
Yeah, no, you're no longer now surprised when it happens.
Like, you're like, and I mean, we've seen it enough here. It gets, like, it's like, come on!
Yep.
And but then you look around the league and go, other guys are doing it too, actually.
It is happening. Now, what's
it
weird, though,
happen.
While that is, it hasn't like the longer field goal percentage gone up? Like guys are hitting more like 55-plus
yes.
yard field goals, but it's the extra point misses that have also gone up.
Yes.
So it is that weird kind of dichotomy of like, really?
Yep.
That doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
It doesn't.
I want another element. I think as well, too, for some guys' careers. I was a big LaVisca Chenault guy when he was coming out of Colorado.
Yes, I remember.
And ultimately, he has not become any sort of the player I thought he'd be. But he has really carved out a really good career as a special teamer. Cordell Patterson, the same thing.
Same career arc had happened to him.
He was a talented receiver coming out of college, never really became it, but he was a really good return guy. Ultimately, actually became a really good running back, too, by the way, which is weird.
Oddly enough.
But
his career arc is fascinating,
but
actually.
But even then, Cordell Patterson has some numbers that put him above guys like Devin Hester. But in the era he plays, he doesn't have the big plays that Hester had. So
correct.
He's not remembered as fondly. I would love if that changed, where all of a sudden you did see guys have these great, memorable. There's no reason Devin Hester's remembered if you look at it through the lens of the modern NFL.
Yes.
But in the era he played, of course he is.
And it was funny because he followed up Dante Hall.
Yeah.
Josh Cribbs was threatening to be one of those guys for a long time.
Like, there's no reason you can rattle off three return guys. When you look at it, the scope of the modern NFL,
yes.
That is wild. And so I want that element back because it is fun. And it does make random stars out of these guys where you're like, really? Okay.
Yes.
We ride. And it adds a different element to teams to deal with, to have. It's not just, do you have a quarterback, do you not? I think that can get very boring very quickly. I really think it can. Where even the Bills, we're sitting here, maybe they need a receiver. Not really. Their quarterback's great. Each won the MVP without Diggs. His leading receiver was Khalil Shakir. His best rookie receiver was out for four games. Amari Cooper was traded, didn't really do too much. Matt Collins let him in touchdown catches. The quarterback means everything.
Everything
in the
sport. Now.
And that's where I'm watching a lot of baseball because I've got the MLB network plan, so I can watch every game. And I'm keeping up with the Angels, 4-1, by the way. Two straight games, winning in extra innings. They finally had clutch hitting, Derek. But so on that point.
You are in for such a letdown.
Such a letdown. But on that point, like, there's different ways to win baseball games. Like, the Yankees are just raking. They're just hitting home run after home run after home run. They lost last night.
They've armed themselves with torpedoes, and it's working.
Yeah. Where the Angels are 4-1, they're winning off sac flies and stuff that. And their bullpen pulling it out. You know, there's different ways to win, where in football, it does feel like we're even leaving that era where, hey, no, like, you know, 2000 Ravens, 85 Bears, they can win you Super Bowls. It feels like we're getting away from that because no one can see Gary Collins or Trent Dilfer making a Super Bowl ever again. That feels insane.
As a matter of fact, you look at the playoff teams. Who's got a guy who doesn't?
And it very quickly leads to, I mean,
your top eight teams in the AFC. Only Pittsburgh was a team that you looked at and you go, yeah, they don't have one.
And by the time they got in the playoffs, everyone was like, oh, God, why? And you even look at that, too. We added a team.
Yeah.
We're now at seven instead of six.
And your eighth seed was a guy that, you know, he is a better quarterback within this league. So if Cincy and Pittsburgh are flip-flopped, for example, then your top seven teams are guys that have quarterbacks or teams that have quarterbacks. In the NFC, Goff, Hurts, Mayfield. Stafford, even though he is still, like, even though he's up there, he still is a better player. He's still a good quarterback. Daniels.
Yep.
Darnold.
Darnold's 4,000-yard passer.
Randomly popping off.
Yep.
Jordan Love is considered to be a good quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I just named half the league, and half the league have guys.
Yeah, so they're the ones that make the playoffs. They're the ones that go on these runs.
And if J.J. McCarthy is anything decent,
that's
guess
another
what?
One.
The Vikings then stay. And if Darnold isn't a flash in the pan, that's Seattle at the 8 in the NFC.
I'd argue that's half the reason why people talk about this draft class like it's bad. It's because the quarterback class isn't very good. Where in reality, like I think for the Bills, this draft class is wonderful because it's a lot of defensive guys, which they need on their team.
And when you have an elite quarterback, it really sharpens and kind of like keeps your status somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a good quarterback, it does come down to the rest of the composition of your team.
Yep.
Because there are other teams that have good quarterbacks, but not great. You look at an Arizona, San Francisco, Dallas.
Look at the Eagles.
They have teams. And the Eagles, how that roster was so complete. Mm-hmm. That's how you make the difference from having a good quarterback and not a great quarterback is the rest of the roster. But if you have a great quarterback, you're kind of solidified now.
Yeah, like you're good really until that guy hits his plateau or just falls off a cliff. 803-0550, the number to call. Do you want to get to some stuff from last night and heading into tonight as well? UB women in action against Cleveland State, 6 p.m. tip-off in the NIT Final Four, Fab Four. That game's going to be on ESPN Plus on television, but here, the bet 15-20 as they look to make the championship game, which will be on a Saturday. Do have a potential to host that game after tonight if they can pack the arena. We'll talk a little bit about that, also some other things as well, as we continue on with the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
I didn't think you had it in you.
I'm your huckleberry.
Why, Johnny Ringo? You look like somebody just walked over your grave.
Fight's not with you, Holiday.
I beg to differ, sir. We started a game we never got to finish. Play for blood, remember?
I was just fooling about.
I wasn't.
Val Kilmer, if you did not hear the sad news, did pass away yesterday. I think it was announced earlier this morning at the age of 65. That is from one of my new favorite movies. This is actually like kind of serendipitous a little bit. I had just recently watched Tombstone. That's what the movie is from. That iconic line was from the 1993 Western. Val Kilmer, Kurt Russell, Sam Elliott, Bill Paxton. It's a loaded cast. I had just recently watched the movie. I mentioned, I think, earlier this week, I'm actually like getting more into Westerns recently. Tombstone was one of them. I mean, man, what a performance. He is going to be missed. In other movies as well, Top Gun, of course, I know has gotten a big run here.
Yep.
He was Batman in the 90s. That's one of the greatest performances I've ever seen, is Val Kilmer as Doc Holliday. That's maybe the most iconic scene. Quotes galore. And I heard that this morning Owen Parker is a huge Tombstone guy.
Yep.
We were quoting for like most of the time as we were wrapping up like the morning run. And we were both just quoting the movie.
Yep.
It's so good. If you have not seen it, especially in a time like now where Val Kilmer sadly passed away, I cannot recommend that movie enough. It is so, so good.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen it, Derek?
No.
Gotta change that. Gotta change it. Josh, have you seen it?
Watching it today.
There we go.
Never seen it, but I'm gonna watch it today.
There we go. I cannot recommend it enough. Tombstone, Val Kilmer, Doc Holliday, one of the greatest performances of all time. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here for another hour. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.